Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where one writer talks to another writer about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you most want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. That's .org. And we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA and their fast-approaching Writers' Conference, it starts July 25th, Thursday, July 25th. Still room if you want to sign in. If you want to learn more, go to pnwa.org. Well, today, ladies and gentlemen, we have a special one. You know, I interviewed a writer once, he really saw himself as a real meat and potatoes kind of guy. You know, he was a suspense writer, and his basic philosophy was like, outline the book, write the book, get paid for the book, and shut up. That was his whole way of looking at things. But when he was talking to me about writing, he talked about outlining. He said, yeah, you got to outline the book. But the thing is, you don't want to outline too much, because you got to leave room for the magic. That's what he said. And he was addressing a part of writing which is always can make a lot of writers uneasy, which is part of the writing and creative process feels in a way like magic, like something that comes from nothing, something given to you without your effort. How does this happen? Can we rely on it? We have to, because it's how we make our living, and yet it seems to come from nothing. Well, today's guest, Mr. Mark Allen, I don't think he has made that uneasy by it. Mark has worn a lot of hats in his life. He is the co-founder and publisher of New World Library, where, among many other people, he first discovered and published a fellow by the name of Eckhart Tolle. He is also a musician, a teacher, a lecturer, and the author of many books himself, including, most recently, The Magical Path, Creating the Life of Your Dreams and a World That Works for All. That sounds good to me. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
It is my pleasure. Now, I'd love to start our little conversation with a story I know you've told many times, but it's such a great story, and I'm wondering if you'd be willing to share it with our listeners, the story of how it was you went from really doing nothing, in a way, to starting this fantastic publishing company.
Yeah, I'll tell you the quick version here.
Okay.
I mean, I wandered around through my 20s. I knew I was born with one important thing. I knew it was important to do what I love to do. But I had no idea how to be successful doing what I love to do. So the day I turned 30, I woke up in a state of shock that I was 30. I wasn't a kid anymore. And I was a total poverty case. I had no job. I had no income, no family support. I'd been a struggling artist and several different things in my 20s. Everything had just fallen apart. And I spent most of the day pacing up and down. And I remembered a little exercise that I'd done during a failed Back to the Land experiment that I did when I was about 22, lasted 5 or 6 freezing months. We were sitting around a fire one night, and this couple said, let's play a game we play at church camp. Let's imagine 5 years have passed, and everything had gone as well as you could imagine. What would your life look like? And we went around the fire. I don't remember a word of what I said when I was 22. But the day I turned 30, I remembered playing that game, and I thought, this is a good idea. But this time I took a sheet of paper and I wrote ideal scene at the top, and I dared to imagine 5 years had passed, so I was 35, which to me was just shockingly old.
Yeah.
The day I turned 30, I felt like a teenager still. And it was kind of cool to be just scrounging for rent. We used all the time, scrounging.
Right.
Every month, just scrounging for rent. But somehow, once I was 30, that was old. It got old fast. So the day I was 30, I literally took a sheet of paper, I wrote ideal scene at the top, and I I imagine 5 years had passed and everything in my life had gone as well as I could dare to dream what would my life look like. Much to my amazement, what spilled out was, I have a publishing company. I had no interest in business. I knew nothing about publishing. And it publishes my books. I'd never written a book. I didn't even know I wanted to write a book. And my music, I'd played music for years, but I'd never recorded anything. And I have a beautiful home on a hill in Marin County, California. I had a slum apartment in Oakland, not a nice part of Oakland either.
Right.
Cheap apartment. And then I had it. Doubts and fears were already just totally overwhelming me. You know, there's way too much work.
Yeah.
You know, start a company and write books and record music and get into real estate. What, you got nothing going on, Mark. Just pick one thing and focus on it. But I said, no, this whole point of this exercise is to dare to dream my ideal. This is my ideal. In fact, my ideal, I added, is, and I don't work too hard either. I only work when I feel like it. None of this 40-hour-a-week bit. And like, no mornings. I'd been a musician and an actor in my 20s, and I never did mornings. You know, they never do a thing before 1 o'clock.
Of course.
So that's, the good, sensible hours as far as I'm concerned. I wrote those all down and then was overwhelmed with doubts and fears. And I got around most of my doubts and fears because I'd heard, just a friend told me about Buckminster Fuller. Buckminster Fuller said, he was a terrible writer. His books are way too complex. But he was a great speaker in the 60s and 70s. And he said, all I heard about him at first was that he said, in his 20s, he decided to either commit suicide or look at his life as this unique experiment. And fortunately, he chose the experiment. And I just latched onto that word, overwhelmed with doubts and fears. I said, let me try this as an experiment for a year or two to go for my dreams, but to do it in my own lazy way. And you know, my doubts and fears said it won't work. And I said, well, if it doesn't work, I'll be no worse off than I am right now.
Right.
I was, I had no money, nothing to make. So even my doubts and fears had to go, well, yeah, that's true. And so I said, so this is worthwhile. So that's what I did. I started the company. I knew nothing about business. I literally walked down to the corner store and said, how do you start a business? You're a business, right? How do you start a business? They said, you go to Civic Center and register, and bam, I was on my way.
Wow. You know what's so funny, Mark? I think about, so when I was in my early 20s, I started a theater company. It was just me and my brother, but we went around touring and doing this comedy show I wrote. And I had never, I liked theater, and I knew how to write. My brother had done theater, but we were young guys. And I'd never started my own show or toured around, but I said, oh, screw it, I'm just going to do it. And I looked up about 3 years into that experiment and thought, if I had known all I had to learn to do this when I started, I wouldn't have done it.
Right.
My ignorance, I just did it one little step at a time, and the thing grew.
Yep. You'll never know the entire process. You can't possibly see it. It's like starting a novel. You can't.
Yeah.
You can't know every detail of the novel before you begin. It's the same thing. I had no idea. One step just led to the next. Each step was very easy. A journey of 1,000 miles just begins with one small step, and each step is very small and easy, but just one after another.
Yeah. You know, you said something very early on that you took for granted, but I think it's critical. And you said the one thing you had was that you knew it was important to do something you love. And I find, as I've begun teaching, I started teaching sort of people about writing and life and so on the last few years. And I find the thing I teach the most is trying to sort of convince people that that matters. That doing what you love is more important than your craft. Doing what you love is more important than learning all this stuff. That alone is mind-boggling to most people, that that's actually the most important thing. Do you find that yourself?
I to me, that was like self-evident.
Right, but
I do find that to myself. When I'll even talk about your mission in life or your purpose, and people, so many people grapple with that. And I say, do what, you know, to live the life of your dreams. If you could have, what would be your dream? And a whole lot of people really grapple with that and say, I don't know. And then I quote Oprah. Oprah has really emerged as a serious teacher. She said, if you don't know what your purpose is, the best thing you can do is find out. Do whatever you need to find out.
Yes. Yes. And you know what's interesting? I just was talking to a woman who's a public speaker, and she was giving me some guidance on getting that part of my career going. And she quoted someone who said, if you don't know what your purpose is, start with, I know this sounds kind of true, but what pisses you off? What do you think needs to change? That's not your purpose, but it might steer you towards something that you think could be better, or that you have that excites you in some way. Does that make any? I know that's not how you are.
Yes, no, it makes perfect. In fact, what I found myself saying, this was, in fact, in the middle of a talk, sometimes I'll find myself saying things I hadn't thought of before. And one thing I said is, if you don't know, you know, what your dream is, ask yourself, what other successful people are you jealous of?
Oh,
you know, do you find any kind of jealousy arising? Like, I don't get any kind of envy or I wish I was there around successful business people I hear. But a real successful writer, it's true. When I hear, you know, they sold 35 million books of this and that, I think, I would love that. And that points you in the right direction, too, I think. What irritates you and what you're envious of. Those could be clues.
You know what the cruelest spiritual truth is, Mark, that I find, the one that drives me the most mad, is that whatever irritates you in other people is what you need to sort of change in yourself. God, I wish it was the opposite, but every time it isn't.
I think that is so true.
Oh, God.
It's always so much easier to see where what other people need to learn than to see what you need to learn.
So, Mark, as I said, you've written this book called The Magical Path, and I love the title because the more I get into what it is to create a book I want to write, and as I said in my intro, a life I want to lead, I see that the element of what could easily be called magic is it always at play.
Mm-hmm.
And so talk to me about what is the magical path and why would someone want to walk it? We live on planet Earth. For our head, baby.
Right.
Got to keep food on the table.
Right, right. Got to be realistic. The older I get, the simpler I see things. And when I look back, I realize these simple little things I did, many of them that I like to call magical, happened. Now, you can call it anything else. This is the only book with magic in the title. It says you don't have to, if you don't like the word magic, if it has negative connotations or whatever, fine. Find something else. Find another word. Basically, all I'm saying is when I look back on my path, I just did two critically important things. One, I dared to dream. I dared to imagine my ideal life, really, my dream life. I dared go there. I want to be a writer. I want to be a publisher. I want to be well paid. I want to have a house on a hill that I have no problem paying for. This is my dream life. I want to be a musician. I want to write poetry and have plenty of time. I want to have a life of ease. This was my dream. The first magical step, you could say, or you could just call it strategic planning. You can call it whatever you want. But there's two vital steps. One is dare to dream and focus on a goal. And the other is deal with all those doubts and fears that come up. And they will and do with everyone. Deal with that sense of whatever it is, inadequacy, or I'm not capable, or oh, it's so hard, or all the doubts and fears that come up get us off track. About 10 years ago, I heard a great analogy that a plane is off course 95% of the time, but the pilot just keeps correcting over and over and over and over, and it reaches its destination. When I heard that, I said, that's the story of my life. When I dared dream, I set a destination. I had no money. I had no job. I said, I want a successful publishing company. I want to write successful books. I want to record beautiful music. And I want to get into real estate. That was my goal, my destination. And then definitely 95% of the time or more, I was off course, meaning filled with doubts or confusion or not knowing what to do or you know, all these things. Dealing with all those things is the main work to do.
Yeah.
Fortunately, you can be off course most of the time, and you keep correcting. You keep getting back to that dream, taking the next obvious step in front of you in spite of the doubts and fears. You know, sit down and write that first page. Just do a page. If you do a page a day, you've got a 365-page book in a year.
I know. The doubts and fears, one of the things I do writing coaching, and they always, my clients always want me to look at their writing and read their writing, and I'm like, look, what you really are having to deal with is your doubts and your fears. If you can get past your doubts and your fears, you don't need anybody to read your work for the most part, you know, within reason. But those are the things. And in fact, you know what's interesting about the doubts and fears, Mark? Isn't it like evidence we create for our own inevitable failure? You know, the fears create this wall of evidence that it's never going to work, and we created it.
Right, exactly. I keep saying all our excuses are not valid unless we believe them. Then they become valid.
That's right.
Many, many people have succeeded brilliantly that have had far worse problems than you or than any of us. And you look at the people overcoming all these problems and succeeding brilliantly, that shows me our excuses are lame. They're not valid.
Well, you mentioned Oprah. She had all the reason in the world not to succeed. My God, she had every strike against her.
Yeah.
You know, especially coming out of the time she was.
Yeah, incredible.
You know, she's inspiring. Yeah. And you know what's funny about you, Mark, because you gave the short version. And for the listeners who haven't read the full version of this story, he really did describe himself as someone who, if he had turned to you the day after his 30th birthday and said, this is what I'm going to do, you would have said, you are so clueless. Because you really were so far from that dream. You had nothing. You had nothing.
No, I'd never taken a business course. I'd been a musician and an actor and a spiritual seeker. I'd been at a Zen center and got kicked out for breaking the rules. And everything I touched just fell apart in my 20s. I was in two theater companies. They both went bankrupt.
Right.
I was in a band. It fell apart.
Oh, it's so funny. You know, I was just thinking about sending out your work to get published, and that, you know, writers do hate to hear no. And obviously, as a publisher, you have to say no to people. But a no is actually guidance. No one wants to hear that, but it is. It's a way of guiding you back that this isn't the direction or the book's not ready. You know, you wish they were all yeses, but it is guidance. I know all my no's were guidance.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And I try to help them with their next step. Sometimes I'll say, you need to just take a writing course. You know, take a local course. Get the basics down. Learn grammar. Or I'll say, you know, this is good, but it's just really different from anything we'd publish. Go to another publisher. Or for many people, I say, it's never been easier or cheaper to self-publish.
Right.
Self-publish. Get it on Amazon. If you can sell a couple thousand copies, you can go back to publishers with a proven track record. And you'll get their attention if you say, I self-published and I sold 2,000 copies on Amazon.
That would mean something to you?
Yeah, definitely does.
Yeah.
Definitely does.
You know, we talked about spiritual seekers, and I mentioned that one of the first people you discovered, Eckhart Tolle, with The Power of Now. Was that the book that you first published?
Yes.
Yeah. So, and you still have a relationship with him, don't you?
Yeah.
As a person who was both an artist and also a spiritual seeker, as you described yourself, that must have been a significant relationship.
Oh, he's one of my favorite people of all times and one of the best teachers of all times, because he really does walk his talk. You get the sense with Eckhart.
Yeah.
He really doesn't care if the book sells a million copies or one copy or none. He really does not care. If it all fell apart tomorrow, he'd be totally happy with it.
See, but I can hear a lot of people thinking, no way. No way. But you say, way.
It's true. I mean, I've hung out with him. I know what he values. And I know I know him, and he really does walk his talk. He really offers no resistance. You know, he writes, to offer no resistance to life is to be in a state of grace, ease, and lightness. He is in a state of grace, ease, and lightness, and he really doesn't resist what happens. You just know, hanging out with him, it could fall apart tomorrow. The whole thing could fall apart. He could be back where I met him, where he was making very little money. He had this little apartment. He had no car. Finally, somebody gave him a little old Dodge Dart or something that he was so proud of. He'd be fine with no money, no job. He would be totally fine.
But, you know, I got to tell you, one of the nice things about being around people who are thriving in a certain way or spiritually centered in a certain way is what they have to say is great, and all their advice and so on is great, but there's something about being in their company that helps you align your rudder a little bit. Does that make sense?
Yes. Exactly.
Energetically. Yeah. It's almost more valuable than their counsel.
Yes. I know the writers we publish, I like to either meet them or even sometimes I'll always Google them. But sometimes I've even called, if they have an office, I've even called their staff and talked to their staff and just chatted and tried to pick their brains. I've even sometimes asked, what's this person like working for? And in some cases, some well-known authors, their staff has said, well, they're not the most pleasant, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a
yeah.
huge red flag to me. The kind of books we publish, the authors need to walk their talk.
Yes.
And there is a huge gap where many, many people will get something intellectually at first. And if they're smart and they can write, they write the book before it's actually gotten deeper and affected them emotionally and really changed their lives. We publish books that change people's lives. And you cannot write a life-changing book unless your life has been changed.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. I was just reading The Course in Miracles. Are you familiar with that book?
Yes. Oh, yes. So is Eckhart. He talks about it a lot.
Well, it's my favorite right now, I got to say. I'm just hooked on the thing. But they talked about the message that we're all receiving a message, but first you have to receive it completely. And once you've received it completely, then you can share it. And that made perfect sense to me as a writer.
Yeah. And what I got from Course in Miracles, I've never read the whole thing. I've just read here and there.
You're not alone.
I've talked to Eckhart about it, though, and the basic message I get from there that I keep coming back to and remembering is they say there's really just two basic emotions, love and fear. Every other emotion is either coming out of fear, like anxiety, all frustration, doubt, it's all based on fear, or our emotions are based on love. And the more we get into that loving place, which is above fear and transcends fear and even dissolves fear, the more we can do what we love. That's why it's just critical to do what we love. That dissolves all kinds of problems.
That love is the target towards which you should aim the arrow of your choices and your thoughts and your actions. It is it is the guiding principle for everything, and yet... And fear is the shadow. It's just the shadow. Just a shadow.
Yeah. Right. As a writer, write what you love. I get submissions from people that are they're following the latest trends. They're trying to write the next bestseller. I'm not interested in trends. I don't care in the least about, you know, what's current and what's hot. I want writers that are just passionate about what they're writing and just love what they're writing. I don't care what the genre is. If they're passionate about it, then it comes through. It comes through in every sentence.
But they have to trust it. They have to trust it because the passion exists within them, and they have to trust it before they've shown it to the world and it's been proven to be valuable. They have to trust it. So you have to trust love, don't you?
Yes. Trust love.
Right.
Yes.
Because what did you do when you saw your dream? You had to trust it. You had no proof it was going to work, but you had to trust within yourself.
Right. I had no idea. I just loved the idea. I loved the idea of writing a book and then not having to go to a publisher with my manuscript saying, please publish.
Right.
I just I said, okay, I'm going to do this myself. I don't know what it involves, but, you know.
Yeah, that's why I started a theater troupe. I said, I don't want to extend my work. I'm just going to go to a stage and start doing it and let people decide if they like it or not.
Yeah, that's it. That's.
But, you know, you mentioned Eckhart's non-resistance. And isn't I think I was just watching something that Deepak Chopra did. And he said resistance, when you resist a moment, you're resisting the entire universe. Because the universe all exists in a moment.
Right.
And isn't fear a kind of resistance?
Yes, yes. Eckhart said that exact phrase, too. You're resisting the entire universe.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a certain valuable reason for fear. You know, if we encounter a bear in the woods or something,
right.
It's great to have that fear and adrenaline, and it could save our lives. But in this modern society, most of our fear is completely unwarranted and unfounded, and we can just let it go. And by finding something we love, or even those moments when we fall in love, you know, what happens to our fears? They just dissolve.
Yeah. Oh, and you know what, Mark? When I called my wife for the first time to ask her out, I'd never talked to her, but I'd seen her in a play, and I'd asked out lots of girls before this. I was 17 years old. I'd asked out lots of girls, and I was always afraid, but when I called her, I had no fear because I just knew, having seen her on the stage, that was it. And I had no fear, and I looked for it. It wasn't there. I was like, what the hell is going on? I'm supposed to be afraid right now.
Yeah. Isn't that wonderful?
What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think it's wonderful that love does just conquer all fear. It's above and beyond all fear. And so even, that's why I keep saying to people, do what you love, and, you know, you never have to compromise with that thing. Find what you love to do, what you're passionate about. You know, when my dad retired, he started making these great little wooden trains and all these wooden things, and he said, gee, if he had it to do over. At first, when I told him I was starting a publishing company, he was one of my biggest skeptics. Oh, yeah, you, Mark, you know. He said, oh, all startups, you know, 80% fail in their first 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, so I. But then when he saw it become successful, much to his amazement, and then he retired and started doing woodwork, he said, finally to me, he said, you know, if I had to do it over again, I wouldn't work 35 years for the same corporation. You know, he could have really done something with his woodwork in some creative way that would have worked.
Yeah.
But he came out of the Depression, and the whole generation that was deeply wounded by the Depression and this recession, a whole lot of people then, too, are...
Don't
really
you hate hearing people talk about the economy? Oh, in this economy, I feel like, will you all shut up and stop talking about how terrible things are? You are only making it worse.
Right, exactly. The economy is just this, it's a huge group meme, you know, as Barbara Marksover would say, or a huge number of people decide that things are getting worse, and so they quit spending, they cut, and things get worse. Now a huge number of people are deciding they're slowly getting better. Okay, great. That's wonderful.
God, Mark, I could talk to you for another 2 hours. I even have a caller online, but I'm not going to be able to get to him. Thank you so much. This has been a great conversation.
My pleasure. It has gone really fast. I enjoyed it.
It has indeed. So it's The Magical Path, Creating the Life of Your Dreams and a World That Works for All by Mark Allen. Thanks again, Mark. Good luck with this book and all the books you're going to write and publish in the future.
Thanks very much. Good luck to everything you do. And I love your website and the magazine. Looks great.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Wow. What a great conversation. Wasn't that wonderful? Well, and in fact, next week we're going to be talking to another New World Library author, Mr. Eric Maisel, who's a specialist on creativity and helping people become more creative, get in touch with their creativity. It should be a great conversation. So until then, well, you hear me say it every single week, folks, and now Mark and I spent 30 minutes talking about it. Do what you love. Write what you love. Love what you love. And believe me, you really can't go wrong, can you? No, you cannot. So until next week, keep on loving. Being lovable and lovely.